the OTB Podcast Network.
8:42 on this Friday morning, Manchester United against Villarreal is going to be the Europa League final. Villarreal managed to hold Arsenal scoreless last night, and as a result, they went through a very good evening for them indeed. And then Manchester United progressed 8-5 on aggregate, despite going down 3-2 to Roma last night. Daniel Harris is with us to discuss. Good morning to you, Daniel.
Hiya.
So Edinson Cavani, let's start with him. If he wasn't already a club cult hero, sticking up for Mason Greenwood and fending off the attack of some Roma players certainly would have done that.
Yeah, with hair all over the show and a plaster on his cheek. Sensational behaviour. it's just such a shame, really, that we haven't been able to see him play in the flesh. And he's one of those players, I mean, I guess, who, before he moved to England, obviously you know he's a good player, but I think that because... he's one of those players, because when you have players who you don't watch every week, sometimes there are just quality players, you know, quality players, but just they never happen to play well when you see them, whether it's in international tournaments or in the European games, you happen to watch them play. And for me personally, he was just one of those people who every time I watched him didn't play particularly well. And the funny thing with him is he's not a great finisher, and yeah, he is capable of a lot of great finishes because he puts himself in positions. So The Cavani fresh air shot is something that I think we've all seen quite a lot, but it doesn't matter because he puts himself there. And I think the thing that he has in common most of all, actually, is with Bruno Fernandes, is there are two people and they will keep making those runs. They don't get affected by misses. And the mental strength to, and also the technical ability, because you have to know that you can do it, to have confidence that if you keep making the runs, then eventually the ball will come to you and you'll do the right thing with it, is a reflection of, I think, where this United team are now. But those two players in particular are characterising the ability to find a way to get stuff done because they don't get bothered when things don't work well.
That has to be one of the main reasons why United fans 100% want Cavani to stay at this point, is that he's already developed that understanding with Fernandes.
Yeah, I think that also you need to have a variety of different attacking options in particular, and players who bring different things to the team. And I think when we were talking about this team last season, the season before, I was saying that I felt like they were mentally weak, that when things didn't go their way, they could start a game well and then they could get discouraged. And what we've seen this season is the complete opposite of that. And Cavani, like, running 30 yards to get involved in the ruck on behalf of Mason Greenwood is another aspect of that, that it's not just now a collection of players who can sometimes do good stuff. It's a team.
And three out of the four English teams obviously making up the two European finals, Daniel. Boris Johnson, I'm sure, would tell us that this is another reason that Brexit works. Are the English teams just superior at the minute? Is it just a weird sample at this point of the season? Or what's your sense of the...
On Boris Johnson, I can't remember if someone pointed out on Twitter, I think it was my colleague at The Guardian, Ed Ahrens, that Leicester had signed... Kante and, my mind's gone blank, can't remember who else, for about a tenner. And someone else had pointed out, well, actually, they wouldn't be able to do that now because of Brexit. So Brexit is definitely not helping this, and it's not going to help English teams get the players that they need because the laws are different. So yeah, they're not going to be able to poach as much young talent as they were before. But what we're seeing is an upswing in the English game, and ultimately, I mean, it's for various reasons. I mean, they all feed into each other. I think one of the reasons is that there are more big clubs in England, which means there are more rich clubs, which means the league is better, which means more people want to watch the league, which means the league makes more money, and the league was just also the first to commercialise, I suppose, which also helps feed into the money and the ability of the English clubs to keep buying players and to do things that other clubs can't afford to do because there aren't as many rich clubs. And it does usually come down to money, but money enables you to acquire talent and also enables you to plan. And so what you've got is you've got Klopp and Guardiola, who are generally considered to be the two best managers in the world. They're both in England. But along with that, you have Roman Abramovich's money, which enables Chelsea to do things. And then they've gone and got Thomas Tuchel also, who's clearly a really good manager. Leicester have got Brendan Rodgers, a really good manager. United have done it a slightly different way in that they've taken someone who obviously has some managerial talent, because whatever people say about the Norwegian league, going to that league and winning the league with a club that had never done it in 90 odd years of history, then doing it again shows that you must know something. And what they've done is a slightly different way, is they've gone to do it with someone who's learning to be a manager, but because they're a club hero, it gives them a lot of political capital with the fans, gives them a lot of political capital with the players, because the players, if the players know that if they take on Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, they're going to lose. And then when you put that together with more money than lots of other clubs, some young players that are coming through, and as I said before, some managerial talent, again, like that is, again, like a good mix. And so the Premier League is basically benefiting from the fact that also the other leagues are in a slightly down period at the moment. The way that Barcelona and Real Madrid in particular have been managed is miserable. And that's, I guess, why we saw the Super League, because Real Madrid in particular are just absolutely desperate. They know that they can't keep up. I think what we're going to end up with now is, it looks, and maybe I'm wrong, I hope I'm wrong, because no one wants it to be like this, but it's beginning to look like you're going to have Bayern Munich and perhaps Paris Saint-Germain, and then the English clubs, and that's how it's going to be in Europe for the next few seasons.
Yeah, that'd be a pretty grim Champions League, I think, and an expanded one at that as well. That point that you make about Manchester United and their approach on a managerial level over the last couple of years, does that inform maybe your hope that this Europa League final is going to precipitate a better run of form or a better few years for Manchester United than, say, the 2017 Europa League final win did for them?
I hope so. I mean, you look at United now, and they're a much better team than that was. That team found a way of getting it done. I remember, probably said it on here, looking at the draw for kind of like the last 16, the last eight, and you're looking, thinking, Mourinho will be able to navigate this because the quality is rubbish. And United got lucky in the draw that year that the semi-decent teams that there were all drew each other, while United just strolled through against Rostock, not Rostock,
Rosenberg
now, and Anderlecht, and Celta Vigo in the European semi-final. I mean, come on. And Ajax were just precisely the kind of team that Mourinho football was invented to be. But now they're in a much stronger position. I mean, they're already a good team. The question now isn't whether Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is going to make United good again, because he has. It's whether they can take the next step to go and become a team that starts contesting the biggest trophies and winning the biggest trophies. And they're not quite ready for that yet, because they still need a player or two. And what we're seeing is City have won so many games this season. It looked like a low points tally was going to win the title. And I've been saying on here all along that I felt that if it was a low points tally, then United would be able to have a say in that because they were good enough to do that. But it looks now like next season, the season after, if you look at where Chelsea are, if you look at where City are, we're probably going back to that point where it's going to need more beyond 90 points. And That's actually not a particularly healthy thing for the league. You don't want the title, you don't want it to be where you kind of draw one game in December and think, oh my gosh, we've got a problem here. Because you want the other teams to be able to compete. And it's strange because the teams below the top few are better than, I would say, probably better than they've ever been. I don't think the teams, like the top six teams, are as good as they've ever been. I don't think the standard amongst them is that high. I don't think this City are as good as City were 2 years ago. And United are better, but they're not as good as the teams United they were beating into second place when they were winning the league. They're not as good as Chelsea in 2007 and 2008. They're not as good as Arsenal in 1999, 2000, 2001. But below them, the standard is good. What we're going to find out next season is whether the teams below that, Everton, but not just Everton, even teams like Brighton have got some really good players, they play some good football, are they good enough to take points off teams that know that they need to win almost every game to win the title? And that is really the key point, I think, and the key aspect that tells you how healthy a league is are the teams who are kind of below the best teams able to compete with the best teams? And I don't know, like we've had it this season, it's been a bit better, but the previous seasons it's been not good at all. So United are well set. If they can sign, I mean, we can see what they need. Like they do probably need another centre forward if they can get a reliable goal scorer, because relying on Cavani, his fitness has not always been great, good though he is. They could do with a number six and they could do with a centre back, but they could probably do without the centre back if they got the number six, and they could do with a right winger. But again, they've got Mason Greenwood who plays there. They've got Marcus Rashford who can play there. They've got Amad Diallo who was bought to play there. So again, it comes down probably to if they get the right number six, someone who will enable them to protect the defence, but also enable them to play Paul Pogba and Bruno Fernandes just as in a three. At the moment, we've got Fred McTominay, and then you have Pogba and Fernandes, which basically means you have to leave out Mason Greenwood, and he's much too good to be left out. And the balance that he gives also means that he shouldn't be left out. So if they can find the right number six, maybe it's Declan Rice, who knows? Maybe it's Yves Bissouma, who knows? Who is someone who is physical and athletic enough to cover the ground in front of the back four, but also able, good enough at passing to be able to help with the playmaking. If they can find that right player that enables them to play Pogba and Fernandes in front and then three strikers, then you'd be talking about a serious team now.
It does feel like they're a long way off that. Cause like you say, obviously they need a number six, but obviously you mentioned centre-back, potentially a centre-forward, maybe a right-winger. And like even on the evidence of last night or the couple of legs against Roma, who, by the way, let's remember, are a team who are 30 points off the lead in Serie A. They ship five goals against them. There's a lot of stuff in the mix there, Daniel. It doesn't all point towards a team that are that well-equipped at this juncture to compete in the Champions League next season.
No, I don't think I agree with that. I think we saw this season that they're well-equipped to compete in the Champions League. Like, they beat Paris Saint-Germain away, deservedly. They absolutely smashed Leipzig at home. And actually, they played really well for most of the game against Paris at home as well. They just went to shit in the last 20 minutes. Leipzig at home. Leipzig away was, I would say, the last time that Ole dropped a massive bollock. And I sat on here saying, when he picked three at the back, he picked Matic and Fred and McTominay in front of that. And I said, sat here afterwards, I remember the day after the game saying, we're going to find out now, because if he does this again, he's never going to learn. And he hasn't done it again. I think United are more than equipped to play in the Champions League. You've seen them beat Manchester City this season. You've seen them beat Liverpool this season. You've seen them beat Chelsea this season. They're good enough. Have they beaten Chelsea this season? No, they haven't beaten Chelsea this season. Sorry, I made that up. But you've seen United play well enough against good teams this season, so they're definitely ready to compete in the Champions League. And there's no team who I think that United could draw and think United won't be able to beat this team. And that's one of the frustrations of where they are now. You're watching Chelsea in the Europa League, in the Champions, going into the Champions League final, and well, Chelsea aren't better than United. So United are ready. The question is whether they're ready to get enough points in a league competition, not a cup competition, to compete over the stretch if it's going to require a lot of points to win the league. And I think what you've got is you've got a lot of players at United, almost all the players at United are top four standard. McTominay is good enough to play in a team, start in a team that finishes in the top four. Likewise, Harry Maguire. Likewise, Lindelof. Now, you're not going to have a Champions League level, winning level player generally in every position in the team. That generally doesn't happen. But you need to have enough players in the team that are able to do that, enough league championship level winning players who carry the rest of the team, who are able to play as well as they can play, and then you see a team that can win the league. Like, not every player City has is one of the best two or three players in the world, and the same is Serve United. They perhaps need one or two more players who are just that level above to make you feel confident about predicting a league title challenge, but I don't think they're far away, and I think the performances we've seen this season show that. It's just about whether they can just add those one or two players. Because look, I think that a centre-back partnership of Lindelof and Maguire, that's easily good enough for the top four. It's good enough for the Champions League, and we've seen it. And what we need to see now is whether they're good enough to go into the final against Villarreal and keep a clean sheet. The Roma game was kind of, you can kind of write that down to being a very specific thing. When you win the first leg 6-2, and let's not forget that one of those Roma goals off the two was that penalty that, I mean, I don't think that was ever a penalty, but anyway, like, when you go into the second leg, Roma are going to throw everything at you. And sometimes when that happens, they'll put you under pressure. Harry Maguire said in his interview afterwards that because they went man-to-man all over the pitch, it meant that there was a lot of space. So I wasn't watching that particularly thinking, my God, this team can't defend, because I've seen their improvement in their ability to defend over the course of the last two seasons. And so whether they're able to defend in the big games, the big moments, that's now what we're waiting to find out about, because that cost them last season against Sevilla, who are another good team. Like, they played brilliantly against Sevilla for about an hour, but the finishing was careless and then the defending was lax and they ended up getting beaten 2-1. Now, they need to show that they've progressed from that against Villarreal, and they could get by next season with the back four that they have and win the title if what was going on in front of it was perfect. But you can't not amend what's going on in front of it and not buy a right winger and not buy a striker and expect this defence to do it. But if you were to do something to strengthen the team, then you might strengthen the team enough so that the current defence was all right.
if there's one team who aren't good enough to compete in the Champions League and won't be good enough to qualify for the Champions League anytime soon, it is Arsenal Football Club. A lot of negativity, a lot of negative feelings after last night, but I went to The Guardian this morning, Daniel. I read 10 talking points ahead of the weekend. I looked at the Arsenal talking points and it filled me with positivity. This particular author said, Arsenal's inconsistency is not especially surprising, given that of their best players, only Partey and Aubameyang are over 23, while the others, Saka, Tierney, the on-loan Odegaard and Emile Smith-Rowe, are still learning the game. The initials beside it, DH. Thank you for filling Arsenal fans with positivity this morning that they are still going to learn the game, but they need to learn bloody quick.
Yeah, they do. It's Arsenal's strange thing. I mean, there are some similarities with United as well. When you watch United over the last few seasons and you're thinking, well, they've got Marcus Rashford, they've got Mason Greenwood. These are unbelievable players. And you don't need that many unbelievable players to have a good team. And I look at Arsenal and I see Bukayo Saka. He's an unbelievable player. And then Kieran Tierney is a really good player. I can't remember who else I mentioned. Emile Smith-Rowe is a slightly different thing. And I talk about this later on, but if you're going to have a number 10, that number 10 must supply goals and assists if you're going to be good. It's not enough to be the pressure trigger, to do an occasional nice thing. It's not enough if you want to be a top team. And even that is really, it's difficult to know with Arteta, because on the one hand, you think, well, what on earth had that bloke done to get appointed? And the answer is almost nothing. Almost nothing. There's no indication whatsoever that he was good at management. He might be. I'm not saying he's not. But the best you can say is you don't know, because he's never been manager before. Then to go and toss him into the mess that is Arsenal, where you had... it was a mess at the end under Arsene Wenger, but like Fergie at the end, because also, you know, it was a bit of a mess under Fergie at the end, but you've got these geniuses... They know how to get it done. So most of the time, Wenger was getting done enough so that it was sort of acceptable. It was getting the Champions League, basically. Won a couple of cups as well. But then Emery came in and the mess intensified. And suddenly you've lost that mad old inventor who's the only person who knows how to get his machine to work. And then you toss in Arteta with very little support. It wasn't like they went and hired him, an expert coach. And then the more I kind of watched Arteta, the more I thought, why would anyone really care about doing what he said? Because I talked about Ole before, and I know those two are always compared together and the situations are different, but there are some things that are worth noticing that are similar or different about them, is that Ole is a club legend, so he's got the political capital that I mentioned earlier. Arteta doesn't have that. He was an all right player for Arsenal, but no player is going to feel like they have to do what he said, because the fans will get annoyed because he's Mikel Arteta, because that doesn't mean anything to anyone. So then it becomes a lot about Arteta's ability as a man manager. Has he got any charisma? Has he got any presence? Has he got authority? And you watch him give press conferences, and he might have, but it's not obvious. It doesn't burn through the screen like it does with the people that tend to be the best of it. But it's not always like that, because I made a film about Matt Busby a couple of years before last. So I've watched pretty much every piece of video of Matt Busby that exists. And his charisma is not obvious. You talk to anyone, experience him, and they'll say the second he walks in a room, even if you're not looking, you know he's there, because he's just got that thing. Now, Arteta doesn't seem to have that, but maybe he does. So at that point, you're starting to think, well, what reasons can I fathom that make me think Arteta's going to be good at this? And all that you're left with now is you're basically left with Arsenal's best performances. Arsenal's best performances are good. The fact that they won the cup last season, I mean, people sort of talked about it as a tactical triumph. I thought that was a bit much, like defend deep and then try and use your fast players on the break. I mean, it's not inverting the pyramid, is it? I mean, it's not that complicated. But he has been able to get a level of performance and commitment out of them at some points. I thought the way he went about this Villarreal tie was really weird, with like changing to three at the back for a semi-final when he was kind of basically limiting what Bukayo Saka, his best player, could do. So I thought he made some mistakes in that game. Whether they feel, the club feel, that he's good enough, I mean, who knows? I mean, what do the people who are making decisions at that club even know about football anyway? I mean, probably not that much, same as at United. So they're not people you can trust. But there have been things to hang on to, I think, that make you think that Arteta might be good. But to be given that job is a monstrous job for anyone. It's a hospital pass. To be given it in your first job in management, when you've been at Manchester City before, there are not that many similarities between managing at Manchester City under Pep Guardiola, where you've got the best coach in the game, perhaps, with the biggest exchequer in the game, perhaps, and some of the best players in the game. That's not preparation for the job at Arsenal. But then you think about, well, let's say they fired Arteta, then who do they get? Who is the obvious choice? And who would be the obvious choice who would take the job? Like, let's say they thought, wow, Brendan Rodgers is good. If you're Brendan Rodgers, are you leaving Leicester to go to Arsenal? I doubt it. So they're in a bit of a pickle, Arsenal, and I'm not sure how they get out of it. But they do have some really good. They do have some really good young players, and they've got Foller and Balogun as well, who looks like he absolutely knows how to score goals. Who they will bring through at some point. So they're not dreadful. But in order to get to where they have to be, it either requires money, which you don't think they're going to spend, or some kind of extreme suitability to be a manager, which you're not sure Arteta has.
Yeah. All right. We'll keep you watching brief on that. Daniel, thanks a million.
See you again, that's everyone.
Thanks a lot, Daniel. Nice there. United Rewind podcast. We could run another half an hour in Arsenal alone on there. Such an absolute basket case.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.